for this hour.
A war economy cannot be sustained forever unless a fake nation is built on it. Such is the case with Israel, who's continuing on a war footing, no matter the costs, even if it means record migration out of the occupied territories. Israel's reverse migration began years ago when the judicial reforms started in the occupied territories. It doesn't just affect the Israeli economy, it also affects Israeli security. But with no end in sight when it comes to Israel's wars, the economy is suffering immensely. Hi, I'm Karash Puramati. This is The Economic Divide. Coming up in today's programs, these are just some of the headlines. Israeli reverse migration. Record year when it comes to Israelis leaving the occupied land, many not planning on returning, taking refuge in Europe and the U.S. As skilled workers departing. Majority of Israelis departing are young, educated, skilled workers who filled key sectors like the high-tech sector. Now, Israel will scramble to fill those jobs. Reverse migration is not only an economic threat, but also poses a security risk for the regime. Except for tax breaks, there is still no game plan to attract Israelis back to the occupied land. We're going to be discussing those points and a whole lot more with Dr. Maria Nikolakaki, political analyst and author, and also Frank Wright, writer, journalist, and geopolitical analyst.
Thank you for having me in your show. It is without any doubt that reverse immigration is a sign that the youth in Israel have lost hope of their country. The point here is that these are the core of the youth are the core of a society that brings more of a future. It reproduces, so it is the backbone of the family, and it also contributes to the future. Right now in Israel, in Gaza, with Trump's quote-unquote peace plan, which is supposedly to stop the war, is nothing but a facade that will not be able to either convince the youth or anyone that has a brain. If you see Trump's peace plan, how he wants to make Gaza into a Riviera, it's just Netanyahu's plan that was presented in May 2024, which was supposed to make Gaza into a smart city by 2035. So this unpacks Netanyahu's plan, imposed by USA, because Israel had failed to actually win over Hamas. And so USA came in to save Israel from its dead end.
Aside from the problem of reverse migration, the Israeli economy is facing lots of problems. Aside from reverse migration, Israel has faced economic pressures like the high cost of living, difficulty in obtaining housing, and challenges in finding good employment. But some of the problems that Israelis are facing are not economic in nature. Political instability, social tensions, and a loss of confidence in leadership are repeatedly cited as reasons for emigration as well.
Israel's messianic plans of the greater Israel is an attack to all the Arab nations in the area. If you see how they demand the disarmament of Hezbollah, how they the U.S. wants to create a base in Syria from which they can more easily attack Iran, then if you see how they want to use Turkey as and Azerbaijan as powers to fight Iran, then you see that this plan has many tentacles that we must be aware of.
Welcome back. This is the social section of the program. The first item that we've picked for you is reverse migration is the real nightmare that buries Israel's expansionist ambitions. How does a country expand when its population is fleeing it? How do you build a future on a land without a people? Regional Political, The Hebrew Daily. The Marker reported a 50% surge in reverse migration from the Israeli occupation state with 56,000 immigrants by September 2025. Analysts link the exodus to the genocide in Gaza and the far-right judicial overhaul tearing Israeli society apart. Lots of predictions. Israel will be gone by 2027. More than a million Israelis have left because they feel the end is in sight. You can't sustain 75 years of permanent war and expect American taxpayers to pay the bill. The Thai people are angry, and the reason is simple. Groups of new arrivals from Israel have begun working and opening businesses without permits while ignoring the country's culture and norms. From Palestine to Thailand, you can't repeat the same behavior in different nations and expect people to stay silent. Respect for people and their culture is a red line.
Hello again, and thank you for having me on the show. The exodus of largely younger, more educated Israelis from Israel over the last 2 years is obviously a worrying trend for its economic outlook, reliant as Israel is on technology and highly skilled, mainly younger workers. This factor, combined with the ongoing instability of the state due to judicial reforms, comes alongside increasing domestic censorship, the Israeli Army Radio being the latest to be shuttered, for example, and capital flight from Israel. Following the Economist's warning of capital flight from Israeli banks in September 2024, a 62% increase in capital flight was reported by Israeli business daily Calculist in October 2024, a trend continuing into 2025. This indicates a general loss of confidence in the Israeli economy, both among foreign investors as well as among Israelis themselves, with 2024 seeing 83,000 Israelis leave, which is the highest number of any year in its history.
Many don't realize that the Israeli regime pays a hefty amount of money to the reservists. Reservists receive an average of nearly $8,000 per month. This system is described as transforming military service from a civic duty into an important economic opportunity for many families. Imagine what would happen to the Israeli economy if this money was not paid to the reservists.
This is a question that's best illustrated in comparison between what we see in the media in the West and in the wider world and what we see in the Israeli press itself. I've been reading the Israeli press quite studiously for around 2 years. So if you read the Israeli press regularly, there's one theme that's seldom seen in media abroad, that the current Netanyahu government relies on the continuation of war in order to survive. Many Israeli commentators, including former leaders of the army, the security services, and indeed of the Israeli state itself, have warned for several years now that Israel is faced with a choice between the survival of the Netanyahu regime or that of the nation. Recognizing this fact and that Netanyahu faces prison on charges of political and financial corruption very likely explains President Trump's move to try to secure immunity from prosecution so that Netanyahu can leave.
This is the InfoNews section of the program. The first item that we've picked for you is U.S. and China AI spending. U.S. tech giants are expected to spend $700 billion on AI infrastructure by 2027. Yet Chinese models like Kimi, Tongyi, Quanwen, and Kuen are already neck and neck with top U.S. models on its standard benchmarks. Our special investigation revealed that the U.S. model is like this. They borrow heavily, they build big, and they scale fast. While on the other hand, China's model focuses on efficiency, optimizes infrastructure, meaning a lean machine. This isn't a spending race, it's a strategy duel. And the smarter player may not be the one who spends the most. The next item is Chinese cash. In the UK, London has become the largest hub for trading renminbi, China's currency, outside the country. Western lenders have used the city as a launchpad to access China's rapidly expanding debt market. Critics fear it has handed Beijing significant leverage over Britain. The next item is world oil. Trump's oil raid, seizing Russian assets and enslaving Europe. The U.S. sanctions against Lukoil are a calculated financial siege. The deadline is November the 21st. The U.S. strategy is clear based on our special investigation, which is create conditions where Lukoil cannot operate, forcing a distress sale. No one will sell them crude. No one will buy their products. Bank will cut off credit, and the result will be a potential acquisition at a fraction of the market value. We're witnessing a state-sanctioned corporate raiding. The next item is U.S. void of talented people. Donald Trump says the United States doesn't have people with certain talents to fill jobs domestically. Trump has said, no, you don't. No, you don't. You don't have certain talents, and people have to learn. You can't take people off an unemployment line and say, I'm going to put you into a factory where you're going to make missiles. The next item is Mamdani's win. Mamdani win rattles Israeli business community in New York City. After flocking to city, Israeli-founded firms brace for a mayor who backs BDS and could freeze them out of government contracts or cut vital ties that have fostered innovation. Welcome back. This is the in-depth section of the program. The number of Israelis leaving the occupied lands has become unprecedented at this level, and the number of returnees is very minimal. This is also an economic problem for the Israeli regime, and at the same time, it's a security risk. The numbers are grim, and they point to a harsh reality for the Israeli regime. Here they are. In 2023, 82,700 left the occupied territories, compared with 55,300 in 2022 and 37,000 in 2021. Percentage-wise, for 2022, it's a 46% increase over the previous year, and for the year 2023, a nearly 50% rise between 2020 and 2024. Roughly 145,000 Israelis left the occupied territories, marking what experts call the largest migration wave in Israel's modern history. Researchers warn that this exodus is draining Israel's skilled labor force and key sectors of its economy, posing long-term risks to growth and productivity. The study found that 54% of those emigrating come from Tel Aviv and central Palestine areas with high living and housing costs that have become increasingly unbearable for young professional people despite their economic importance. Now, let's bring in our guest, Dr. Maria Nicola Kaki, political analyst and author. Maria, my question, the occupied West Bank is exploding with violence as the economy there is worsening. The tech sector is barely surviving, like other industries, of course. My question, won't that contribute to more people leaving?
Now, there seems to be a dispute on West Bank coming from Israel and the other Arab nations. So only Israel wants to take over, full occupy West Bank. But I think it is also a matter of time to full explode in the near future. I do not think that Arabs will peacefully accept the annexation of West Bank, but despite what Trump says, they have already agreed on Israel's greater expansion Yinon plan. And so if there is no reaction, I can't think how it will stop, despite the fact that it will have reactions and responses from the Israeli society itself, which will be further fragmented than it is right now.
Now, in order to make people return to the occupied lands, the Israeli regime has become desperate. Finance Minister Smotrich has announced 0% income tax for new immigrants. The tax benefit will be graduated with a zero tax rate in 2026 and 2027 under income in Israel, with the tax rate gradually increasing to 30% until 2030. The budget deficit in 2024 reached 6.9% of the GDP due to higher defense and civilian spending as a result of the war with the Hamas resistance group in Gaza that erupted in October 2023 and subsequent conflicts in Lebanon and Iran. It has since eased to 4.7% in September. A rock-bottom listing. Israel ranks last on Nation Brand Index, perceived as chaotic. The Nation Brand Index ranked Israel last among 50 countries, citing perceptions of chaos and instability. Despite a strong objective metrics, Global Views associate Israel with conflict and risk, highlighting a growing discontent with younger generations and economic challenges abroad. After the Gaza war began on October the 7th, 2023, the Israeli stock market and currency nosedived. It is estimated that Israel would lose around $400 billion in the next decade and experience a significant economic shock. Now, let's bring back our guest, Frank Wright, writer, journalist, and geopolitical analyst. Frank, my question, the current and future footing indicates that Israel wants to continue its wars, like in the case of Lebanon and then there was Iran. If this trend continues, what is the breaking point, or has Israel already reached that breaking point, not to mention violence in the occupied West Bank?
Well, yes, it will contribute to more people leaving. And one significant factor is that Western audiences are just beginning to realize that Israel is also war fighting in the West Bank, which its government minister state is to be annexed completely. Earlier this year, the Catholic Church, along with other Christian churches in the Holy Land, protested that the last remaining Christian town in the West Bank was being violently terrorized by armed arsonist settlers backed by the Israeli army. The Holy Family Church was bombed again in Gaza several days later, which was seen as a retaliation for drawing the world's attention to the fact that Israel's violence is not only directed at Muslims, but at Christians too. This too in the birthplace of Christianity. The assault on the West Bank will only further mobilize world opinion against Israel. President Trump has said the West Bank will not be annexed. And J.D. Vance, the vice president, has said that Knesset's motion to do so was foolish. Capital flight will likely increase too, following the divesting from Israel of the Norwegian Sovereign Wealth Fund and Danish and British divestment, which came in its wake. These conditions combine to a likely driver of further net emigration from Israel, again, likely comprising its youngest, brightest and best, leaving a country in which they see little future for themselves.
A remarkable wave of departure from Israel is not the Israelis' economy-only problem. There are so many. Until recently, Israel and the West sought to displace Gaza's residents. It's pretty ironic that now Israelis themselves are fleeing the occupied territories. How Israel can recuperate in its key sectors is anyone's guess. I'm Keresh Purnamati, and I'll see you next week.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, welcome to another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you, and in this edition of the program, we'll have a look at the contents of Surah Al-Ankabut, or Chapter Spider, the 29th chapter of the Holy Quran. Dear brothers and sisters, let's listen to the 34th and 5th verses of Surah Ankabut, and we shall discuss them later on.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
إِنَّا مُنْزِلُونَ عَلَىٰ أَهْلِ هَذِهِ الْقَرْيَةِ رِجْزًا مِّنَ السَّمَاءِ بِمَا كَانُوا يَفْسُقُونَ
Indeed, we will bring down on the people of this city punishment from the sky because they have been defiantly disobedient.
وَلَقَدْ تَرَكْنَا مِنْهَا آيَةً بَيِّنَةً لِقَوْمٍ يَعْقِلُونَ
And we have certainly left of it a sign as clear evidence for a people who use reason.
So, after you listen to these two verses, and you were with us with the story of Prophet Lut and his people and those guests that they were actually the messenger angels from the Almighty Allah, in order that the fate of this polluted group of people might be made more clear in their mission, the Quran adds in this verse, إِنَّا مُنْزِلُونَ عَلَىٰ أَهْلِ هَذِهِ الْقَرْيَةِ رِجْزًا مِنَ السَّمَاءِ You know what the punishment of these people shall be? إِنَّا مُنْزِلُونَ عَلَىٰ أَهْلِ هَذِهِ الْقَرْيَةِ Verily we are bringing down upon the people of this town رِجْزًا مِنَ السَّمَاءِ A punishment from the heaven بِمَا كَانُوا يَفْسُقُونَ For what they were transgressing. And then it says وَلَقَدْ تَرَكْنَا مِنْهَا آيَةً بَيِّنَةً لِقَوْمٍ يَعْقِلُونَ And certainly we have left a clear sign of it for a people who have sense which we will shortly refer to. Anyway, what we understand from these verses altogether is that the repetition of sin and persisting to its doing caused the descent of chastisement of Allah. And the acquaintance with the philosophy of history and being acquainted with past generations are regarded by the Quran. And that's why it says, وَلَقَدْ تَرَكْنَا مِنْهَا آيَةً بَيِّنَةً Out of all these ups and downs, what you should get is those clear signs. Anyway, قرية or town, إِنَّا مُنْزِلُونَ عَلَىٰ أَهْلِ هَذِهِ الْقَرْيَةِ is the قرية of Sodom. The cities and towns around it, of course, and the people of Lut were the ones who used to live in it. The population of them has been mentioned about 700,000 people. And that's not actually small number. Anyway, the objective of the Arabic term rijz is punishment here. Its original meaning is anxiety. Rijz means anxiety. Then everything that causes anxiety is also called rijz. And that's why Arabs use it in a lot of senses, like harsh afflictions, plague, intensive snow and hail, even the temptation of Satan and divine punishment. Also, the Quranic sentence, بِمَا كَانُوا يَفْسُقُونَ For what they were transgressing, states the cause of their painful punishment, that was transgression and disobedience from the command of Allah. And its application in future form of the verb is an indication to the continuation of their ugly deeds. That's an important point that we also need to notice. And this meaning, actually, shows this fact, that if those people stop the continuation of it, and if they return to the path of righteousness, path of piety and purity, they would not be involved in such a punishment, and their past sins would have been forgiven. So, brothers and sisters, these messengers, angel messengers of the Almighty Allah, they said that inna muhliku ahli hadhihi al-qarya. They also said inna munziluna ala ahli hadhihi al-qarya rijzan min as-sama. they said that we are bringing down for sure upon the people of this town a punishment from heaven. Now, in this verse, the manner of their painful punishment has not been explained, and it only refers to the ruins of their afflicted and non-afflicted cities. And it says, وَلَقَدْ تَرَكْنَا مِنْهَا آيَةً بَيِّنَةً لِقَوْمٍ يَعْقِلُونَ. And certainly, we have left a clear sign of this for a people who have sense. But the explanation of their punishment is referred to in other verses of the Holy Quran, like chapter Hud, in different verses, implying that, at first, a kind of severe earthquake turned their cities upside down, and then a shower of stone rained on them in a way that their bodies and their ruined cities and castles were buried under it. Also, one noteworthy point is the application of the Quranic phrase ayatan bayyina, a clear sign. This could refer to the remaining of the city of Sodom, which, according to the verses of Quran, was located alongside the way of the caravans of the people of Medina and Mecca, and they could see it at the advent of Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, the Prophet of Islam, as Surah Hijr mentions. It is on a way yet remaining. And of course, there's also the mention of it in Surah Safat, where it says, verily you pass by their cities day by day, and by night will you not ponder. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to set us among the guided ones and the people of the straight path. Wassalamu alaykum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the unwind all the secrets this life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always work for me. When faith begins, you raise your tired hands toward the sky, and the dark night lights up as you praise God. Your tears rain on your hijab and this cold air is filled with the fragrance of jasmine flower. Come and walk again in our troubled streets and lanes, and heal the scars of our city. Your sense of heaven, oh Fatima, Fatima, tonight someone hungry and poor, like said your door. Give him your necklace and the only food in your home. You talk to God until the rising of the sun, and you forget yourself while praying for everyone. Come on. Troubled streets.
researchers has worked quietly shapes the future of how machines see and understand the world. They bridge the gap between abstract algorithms and real-world applications, pushing boundaries in fields like deep learning, computer vision, and intelligent document processing. My guest today is one such innovator, an academic and practitioner whose contributions span both cutting-edge research and impactful industry collaborations. With a passion for pattern recognition and a commitment to advancing AI education, he continues to inspire the next generation of scientists and engineers. Welcome to SORP. I am Bahman Ray. Yusri Kesentini is an associate professor at the Digital Research Center of Sfax in Tunisia, where he leads the Deep Vision research team. With a PhD in pattern recognition from the University of Rouen, France, and an engineering degree from the National Engineering School of Sfax, his work centers on deep learning, computer vision, and document image processing. He has authored over 60 publications and actively collaborates with industry on technology transfer projects. Dr. Yusri Kesentini, very good to have you on this program.
Thank you very much for the invitation. I'm honored to be with you today. Thank you.
It's a great pleasure, actually, to have you here in Iran as well. You're here for the sixth edition of the Mustafa Prize.
Yes, I'm invited for the ceremony, and it is the first time that I visit Iran, and I'm very happy to visit this nice country.
It is indeed pleasant for us as well, and I hope you enjoy your stay, the rest of it, as many days as you are going to be here. And I hope you come back so that you can travel also.
Sure.
Very good. Dr. Kesentini, what first sparked your interest in technology and artificial intelligence?
Yeah, I think it is my first experience in artificial intelligence. What it was in the my end of study, engineering study, in this period I worked in the preservation of historical documents. I work in Flaubert draft. I don't know if you know Flaubert. Flaubert is a writer.
It's Gustave Flaubert.
Gustave Flaubert, yes. It's Madame Bovary.
Yeah, very famous.
So I have worked in the preservation of the draft that write Flaubert for Madame Bovary.
The manuscripts.
Yes, the Lovely. Manuscripts. And I find this experience very, very interesting. So here we see how artificial intelligence can help historian to preserve these documents, to preserve our history, to get more accessible to our citizens, these kind of documents that are very, very in their paper version are very sensible.
How did you develop the project later on? Do you still work with the project or is it done?
After my PhD?
Yes.
No. Until now, in the Digital Resource Center, we continue to work on document images. Uh-huh. This is a part of our works in my research team, in the division research team. And we work on other kind of document, like document enhancement, for example, using generative artificial intelligence. If the document is degraded, is the poor quality, if there is some noise, some watermark in the documents, how we can remove this noise before transcribing the document. Because if we work directly in the transcription of this kind of documents, right, of degraded documents, we don't get a good quality of OCR quality. So the idea is to propose some tools, some artificial intelligence tools, to improve the quality of documents, what we call document enhancement, and after that we can apply the transcription tools to get the text.
And how expandable this is to more languages? For example, if they want to apply the same thing to Farsi, or to some other language, Thai, Chinese, how is that possible?
Generally, no, we work with machine learning techniques, so it is mainly deep learning techniques. So it is the same model architecture that we can train on different language. So sometimes there is some adaptation to deal with one language to others, because for example, for Arabics, we have some diacritics, the alphabet is of a bigger size than Latin, but the main architecture is mainly the same. So there is some extra processing, some adaptation for multi-script recognition.
Right, very good. And what were the biggest challenges that you faced during this research?
In a document, you mean? There is many, many challenges. Degraded document is a challenge. Also, in another project, we work on ciphers documents. In ciphers documents, it means that kind of documents that were used in the 13th century for secret religious and political exchange of documents. And in ciphers, the characters are scripted. The text is scripted. So here, it is another difficulty because we don't have many labeled data. We don't know what kind of alphabet it's used. The symbols, we don't have any idea. So this was a challenging project that we have dealing in collaboration with the Computer Vision Center of Barcelona in Spain. And here we have proposed many techniques like few shot learning to deal with this problem, domain adaptation, that is techniques to deal with the data scarcity for training mainly.
Right, and I want to connect the dots here. How did you continue what you learned in your project, in your doctoral studies, into what you're doing right now?
Yeah, the models, the machine learning models, is completely different because in my PhD we don't have deep learning when I conduct my PhD. So I, for example, in my PhD we have used the Markov chain, the Markov models. It's a kind of machine learning models. In this epoch, it was the state of the art models to transcribe text. Now it is different with the arrival of deep learning. It is different because before, with hidden Markov models, we need to work on the future extraction step. With what we use handcrafted futures, it is generally we need many months to develop some futures to put them as input to the model. Now with deep learning is more easy because deep learning can learn automatically these kind of futures. We don't have to work with handcrafted futures. So it's different, but the main idea, because you use machine learning, we need to data to train the models. This is common between the two approaches, but there is some difference. For example,
focused on pattern recognition. Very good. And tell me something about, can you describe the transition from being a student to becoming a faculty member and researcher?
Yeah, it's very different because when we are a researcher, an associate professor, I start to build my team, my research team, when I come back to Tunisia. So we start with few members. It is PhD students, so we need to learn them how doing research. So what I have learning from my experience, I need to give them to my students. And after the team is bigger, so we have many members, researcher in the team. We have many projects, mainly with industry, with international partners. So we, in this stage, I must to learn how to deal with a project, how to collaborate with partners, how to give the works to my students, work plane. So it is different.
Right, and I'm going to talk about the creation of the Deep Vision research team at CRNS. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with that?
Yeah, it's because when I come back in Tunisia, our research center is new. So I was from the first researcher that integrate the research center. And in this case, when you come back to your country, you have two choices: integrate an existing team or build your own team. So I Indeed. Choose the second solution, which is more difficult, but there are many challenges with this solution. I choose to build my team, to work on my favorite research field. So this is a choice.
And are you satisfied with the results?
Yeah.
Very good. And tell me, how has your research focus shifted over the years with the rise of deep learning?
Yeah. With deep learning, as I said, there are many pre-processing steps that are removed, mainly for future extraction. Pre-processing, we don't have many pre-processing, contrary to when we work with traditional machine learning. In counterpart, we need a huge quantity of computing resource. You need GPU because deep learning. We need also a huge quantity of data for training. And we need to learn, because deep learning is a domain, a research domain that is, there is a big, big community in the world that work in this domain. And there is every day new models, new architecture. So you need to be up to date to can understand what is the new topics, to adapt your research interest, giving the news.
Thank you so much for your time, Doctor.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for sharing this time with us. Until next time, it's goodbye from me, Bahman Ray.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من، این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش، با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم نیست.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
ولا تتفرقوا فيه.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن، دوری از قرآن، از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. Quran, Quran.
كتاب الله.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant factor
Imamat yek asl zinda ast dar tarikh Islam
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. We're welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. Please stay tuned.
Surah Al-Qadr was also revealed in Mecca, like the other Meccan surahs. It is short and rhythmic. There are also narrations concerning Surah Al-Qadr itself, stating that if someone recites Surah Al-Qadr 7 times over the graves of the believers, God will grant forgiveness to both the deceased and the person who recited the chapter.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم به نام او
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. In his name, for existence is from him. He is the source of all types of mercy. In his name means seeking help from all his attributes. Seeking help from Allah, which signifies all God's attributes, not just As-Samad, the eternal refuge, or Al-Qadir, all-powerful, or Al-Hay, the ever-living, or Al-Qayyum, the self-subsisting. Allah encompasses all, like the word liquid, which include all liquids. It does not say Bism As-Samad or Bism Al-Qayyum, but rather Bismillah. This is the same that comprises all of God's attributes. I seek help from all His attributes. He is the source of all mercy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qaraati. To find out more about this program and our other programs, please log on to our website, iranradio.ir. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.